This is Dr. Jay Corsandi, and you're listening to The Best Night Ever, the show that's dedicated to helping you get your best night's sleep. Over the last 20 years of treating patients, I've worn many hats, including dentist, engineer, psychologist, artist, corporate executive, and more. I've found that the key to success, health, and longevity lies in sleep, and that's why I created this show. I want to teach you how to make sleep your best friend. Join me on a journey to uncover cutting-edge science, life-changing tips from renowned experts, ancient and modern sleep secrets, game-changing routines, and lifestyle hacks that will educate, inspire, and ultimately help you get the best night ever. Everything happens when we sleep. It is our nightly reset. Do you believe that? I know I do. So as we sleep, muscles and tendons develop and recover, metabolism kicks into overdrive, and fat can even burn away. Our cognitive skills fuel up at night, and our white blood cells multiply while memories realign and snap into place like a puzzle. In this episode, I get to interview Tara Youngblood. She's a fusion scientist specializing in the science of sleep and the co-founder of the Chili Pad, which is the secret weapon the past presidents, first ladies, and celebrities use to up their own sleep game to an expert level. And I was so excited to have her on the show, and I can't wait for you to hear what we talk about. In this episode, we're going to find out why she went into the sleep industry and how she developed the Chili Pad, her husband's relationship to the waterbed industry, which was very interesting. We're going to find out what the Chili Pad is. In case you've never heard of it, it is a bed cooling system that circulates water on a special pad that you sleep on top of and then can help regulate your body temperature. And that is the trick, folks, to getting great sleep. We're also going to talk about why sleep has become so popular in the society and the public eye and why we see sleep everywhere these days. What's wrong with sleep in the modern world? We're going to talk about the relationship between snoring, sleep apnea, sleeping hot, and your sleep suffering and how you can fix that. The optimal room sleep temperature and why that may not be the best idea. Why cold exposure is getting so famous these days, whether it's cold showers, cryotherapy, ice plunges, sleeping cold. What's going on with all this cold stuff? The benefits of sleeping cold, including one that I think everyone can appreciate, is lose weight, how that can happen. The optimal sleep temperature, whether that's a little cooler for you or a little hotter for you, there's ways where you can find that out. We're also going to find out about her new product called the Uller. So there's the Chili Pad, which is their original, and then the Uller, which is the kind of 2.0 model where there is a temperature thermostat regulation module in there, kind of like a Nest for the cooling system, where you can then program to maybe fall asleep a little bit warmer and then cool off as you get into deeper stages of sleep throughout the night, and then use what's called a warm wake-up feature, where you can actually gently get some heat through your body and wake up in the morning without the need or use of an alarm clock, which I find fantastic. We'll also talk to her about jet lag hacking. She travels a lot and she's got some tricks for you for that. I also kind of prod her a little bit about her nighttime routines to see what she does to get some fantastic sleep. It's always fun geeking out with these sleep people. And if you want to learn more about her company and the product, you can go to chilitechnology.com. That's chilitechnology.com, where you can purchase one of these if you are interested. I've got a discount code for you. That's bestnightever25, which will get you 25% off your Chili Pad. Or Best Night Ever 15, which will get you 15% off your Uller, which is their newer model. So again, chilitechnology.com, Best Night Ever 25 for 25% off, which is a big chunk of change for the Chili Pad. Or Best Night Ever 15, which will get you 15% off your Uller. And with that said, I invite you to sit back, relax, and listen to this fantastic interview with Tara Youngblood from Chili Pad. And off we go. All right, Tara, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm excited to have you on here. This is something that's very near and dear to my heart. Obviously, we're talking about sleep and temperature regulation and sleep hacking and all kinds of cool things related to sleep performance. But I guess I want to start the show off with finding out a little bit more about, you know, I don't think people really end up in sleep as a career just off of a chance thing. There's usually some story or reason behind it. So what got you into the whole sleep industry?
So we kind of stumbled into the sleep industry sort of by accident. Todd is my business partner and husband, and his uncle invented the waterbed. And we've done lots of product development around everything from airbeds to mattresses and things like that over the years. When we came up with the idea for the chili pad, it was a lot more around sort of just being more comfortable because we were both different temperatures at night and the good old fashioned thermostat war of I would really like it to be this and he would really like it to be that. And, you know, so that argument seemed to be better if we each had a remote that said, this is my temperature and your temperature. I really feel like I got into the science of sleep because I have always struggled with sleep. It's always been a part of, as a little girl, I wasn't a good sleeper. I've always struggled with sleep. And even when we invented the chili pad, I really wasn't optimistic. I was definitely the naysayer of, I'm not sure it's going to change my sleep that much, but it'll make it more comfortable. But a lot of people started saying, wow, this is really changing it. And I was finding it was changing. And so I started chasing, well, what's the science behind watching people sleep versus just that comfortable, adjustable temperature thing going on? So that's how I got there.
Yeah. So you mentioned Todd and the waterbed background. That's pretty a fascinating story. I think it was his uncle or something like that. Can you tell me a little bit more about how that happened?
Oh, yeah. He's a riot. So his name is Charlie Hall or Charles P. Hall, if you want to Google him. He invented the waterbed as his master's thesis in California, the University of San Francisco, in the height of everything hippies. I won't say a date because he'd probably get mad. But one of his original things was a Jell-O version. So you can imagine water was better than Jell-O. There's lots of iterations that go into any product and any product development. But yeah, he has some fun stories on how he got all the way to the waterbed.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think I tried a waterbed out when I was young, probably in the late 70s, mid 70s, and it was a little funky. I mean, I didn't really think a lot about sleep then, but I don't think that's too popular these days anymore, huh? The waterbed?
I think that, you know, that's a lot of water, so it's really heavy. But, you know, we use water in what we do because it's just more effective at transferring temperature. You know, when you think about, you know, your oven and, you know, putting your hand in your oven and you don't burn it immediately, obviously, unless you touch something, versus putting your hand in boiling water. You know, the transfer of water and air is significantly different. So we don't obviously use the same amount of water as a waterbed. We've been able to refine that down to a more viable version of water, but I think it was the weight. But it still did a great job. Like if you ever slept on a waterbed without the temperature management in it and that cold just sucked that heat out of you, you'd freeze your tail off. With no heat on that water, because water's just a fabulous. I have a whole like soapbox on water because water is really special as a molecule all the way up to everything it does for us. So yeah, I have a side beyond sleep. Next thing to fix is water.
It's funny you mention that because I've gotten very enchanted with water lately as well too. All right, so talking about water and beds, I think it was only a natural evolution to come up with this thing called the chili pad, which is what we're going to talk about in the show as well. So for the people who don't know what this is, can you kind of give us a description?
Yeah. So if you picture yourself as a human body, you are an engine. You put off heat, you put off energy, like we talked about, even just to the water inside you, you create energy. The chili pad acts as like a radiator to that engine. So it circulates just water. There's no EMFs in the bed. And that circulation of water is maintained at a temperature you set it at. So you can pick what that temperature is between 55 and 110 degrees. And when you do that maintains your body temperature. And obviously we can get to the science of it, but you're looking for thermal neutral to cool depending on what sleep state you're in and what time of the night you can perfect what that temperature is to match your sleep state that you're looking for.
Got it. So why is this all important anyways? Why do we want to be putting things in our bed to help cool things down? What's that going to do for us?
Okay, so the super geeky people out there will appreciate the fact that as a physicist, entropy is how we measure heat in the universe and disorder in the universe. And our bodies, obviously, as part of that universe, are constantly fighting against entropy and heat. It's part of our aging process. It's part of as we move through life. So the intrinsic heat, we, like I said, we're an engine. We have heat in our system. Obviously, the hotter an engine gets, the less efficient it is. Just like your race car, you wouldn't drive your race car out without managing the heat. And everyone on a super hot day has sweat and all those sort of mechanisms going on to keep us cool, to maintain our body temperature as we desire. At night, we've kind of, in our modern world, changed that dynamic. So in even just 100 years ago, you figure outside, they would still have a building they'd go to. There wasn't central heat or central air conditioning. That temperature evolved throughout the day, just like it did outside. Our mattresses before were all made of natural materials. There weren't foams and other things that were contributing to that heat equation. We didn't have super efficient blankets that contributed to that heat equation. So at night, what happens when we're sleeping, instead of being in this thermal neutral environment that allows our body to drop to its lowest temperature of the day, which it does, that's part of our circadian rhythm, it's actually heating up in that nice little oven that we create for ourselves each night. So we really do that. You know, you'll see the recommendations of cooling your room, the inefficiency of cooling your room. We can get into, you know, cooling your house.
That's one of my things coming up.
Your whole space versus underneath your blankets, on your mattress where you're sleeping is just much more efficient way to do that. And you can be a little more specific to your body when you're just in that space. So you and your sleep partner don't have to be at the same temperature as you would if you just managed your temperature through the room.
Right. Okay. So I think evolutionarily, I think is the word. I think our sleep environment has changed. Our sleep requirements have changed. I think the toxic load and the stress load of modern day life has also changed some of our sleep habits and sleep results. So on that note, you know, when, and I've talked about this before, if I go to like a grocery or a supermarket or anywhere and I'm in the checkout aisle, I look at all the magazines and, you know, 10 years ago, they used to be all about better sex and better relationships and better different things. And now they're all about sleep and brain performance. So why do you think the public perception has changed to be more all about sleep these days, especially in the news and the society as a whole?
So the really crazy thing for me as I dove into sleep is that there were people studying sleep in the 70s and kind of looking at it, but very little. So when you look at the sort of explosion, if you were to almost graph the progression of number of people talking about sleep, looking at sleep, researching sleep, having it part of the sleep equation, it has exploded in the last 10 to 20 years. Even 20 years ago, your primary care physician didn't talk about sleep in their whole medical school experience, just about. Like, it is insane how little conversation there was about sleep. It just was this add-on thing that kind of took up a third of your day. What a waste, what a pain in the butt, not worth the time. And suddenly we're like, wait, the evolutionary wise, we did need this for some reason, apparently, because we spend a third of our lives doing it. So let's research it and figure out why do we sleep. And we're finally having those why do we sleep conversations. And as soon as you do, you're like, wow, that's the key to like chronic disease and autoimmune and overall health metrics in a way that even, you know, is just amplifies what you do or don't do for diet and exercise. So it's just got this powerful effect on our lives, but we didn't really know it did. We kind of discounted it pretty heavily until very recently.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you bring up, because I have this conversation with my patients all the time. I say there's really three pillars of health. One is nutrition, one is movement, and one is sleep. And I'll get these patients coming and say, you know what, I eat great, I exercise all the time, but then when we do a sleep study on them, their sleep is terrible. And they go, well, why am I not getting better? And once we figure out that missing piece of the puzzle, like I think society has started to realize, then everything comes together, then they get better, then they perform. Win-win situation.
I do. I really feel like the equation has to include sleep, and we've only included diet and exercise. I really do feel like you mentioned stress. I feel like the, you know, if you put it in an equation, there's a big minus stress that has to also fit on the end of that equation. Because if you don't manage that, if you're able to put a minus number in front of that stress thing, it's also going to eat up and eat all the other stuff, basically. It'll eat away at your sleep. It'll eat away at your diet and movement. All the other good things you're doing in your life, stress will also be, it's a monster.
So speaking of all these different things that are affecting our sleep, what's wrong with how we're sleeping in the modern world, or how are people not paying attention to their sleep?
So I think the first thing is we forget that we actually have a body clock inside of us, that we have a circadian rhythm, that there is a timing to things during the day. Daniel Pink has a great book called When, and I don't think we account for that in any part of our day. We don't think about when we eat dinner. We don't think about when we get up in the morning, when we time our sleep. And a part of that is some of the history of discounting sleep in general and not counting when you go to sleep as being important. But I think the first thing we do is we don't respect what our body wants to do for sleep and when it wants to do sleep. So I think that recognizing that you have a clock and giving it its due is really the first step in that process.
Yeah, I think awareness, I call it awareness too as well, after all the meditation stuff I'm doing. But it is really becoming aware of your body's needs and requirements, your circadian clock, and then sleep hygiene, and we'll get into biohacking and all these different things. I think it's a sum of all these different parts together. But yeah, you hit the nail on the head. So in my practice, and we've talked about this before off mic as well, I treat patients for snoring and sleep apnea, what's called sleep disordered breathing. A lot of them are coming in here with sleep issues. How does temperature regulation and sleep disorder breathing exist together? Is there a relationship, or can they improve their sleep despite the snoring and the apnea?
Yeah, I think that there absolutely is. I think that there's, you know, obviously the oxygen equation trumps everything. You know, that's the first thing they teach you even in first aid, you know, airway breathing, you know, those are critical. So there's not a lot that temperature can trump as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. But when you look at how your brain works, how it evolved to trigger sleep, it is affected by temperature. So in your hypothalamus, which I like to think about as the oldest part of your brain from an evolutionary perspective, it's the unconscious part of your brain, your VLP neurons are actually triggered by temperature. So Clifford Sapir out of Harvard was the first person to kind of coin the term sleep switch. But those neurons are actually triggered by a change in temperature. Now you need to have that right timing. That's part of that circadian rhythm. So a change in temperature at 10 o'clock in the morning is not likely to put you to sleep. But if you time that right, if you do that as part of your sleep hygiene, it's pretty magical because you've hacked into an unconscious part of that circadian rhythm, that clock, and it says, oh, now it's time to go to sleep. And once you're asleep, the things you can affect, as you know, with apnea and breathing, it's you can't make a conscious decision to breathe differently when you're sleeping. You have to have some mechanism that maintains or changes that for you because you're asleep. And temperature also can affect that deepest part of the night when you're asleep, to get better deep sleep, to get better REM sleep, to really think about the quality of your sleep. Temperature, again, because it can affect that unconscious mind, it has a way to hack through your sleeping self and make changes without you knowing it, or without willpower either, which is kind of nice.
Ah, okay. So let's talk about a little bit more about temperatures. And you touched upon it a little bit when we first started, room temperatures. So, you know, I've read a ton of articles. You've read a ton of articles. I think the general consensus is the colder, the better, up to a point. Patients ask me, what temperature should I have the room? And I say, well, the research says under 68 degrees, which for me is cold. Like I prefer to have a warmer room and a cooler bed. So I guess, can you explain to people why that would make sense for a number of reasons?
Yeah. So I like to break the night up. I think the best way to sort of think about it is three buckets, because if you look at blocks, we want to put them the same distance. So your first bucket of the night is your bedtime bucket. What time and all that hygiene and what temperature you like to go to sleep at. And that is absolutely subjective. There's a lot of feeling. There's a lot of habits. There's what you grew up with. There's a whole lot of mess in that bedtime bucket of what helps you go to sleep. And that is definitely, when people say, well, what temperature should I go to sleep at? I'm like, well, what helps you go to sleep? And for some people, that's actually warm. A lot of people with autoimmune, neurological disorders, the elderly, a lot of our hospice patients, cancer treatments, they're in cancer treatment, they all want to get warmed up because their body thermostat is broken for some reason, and you have menopausal women that want to be as cold as possible because their thermostat is kind of funky. And even when I have a cold or run a temperature, I want it to be colder, and I usually like it warmer. So when you're awake, the temperature you want, you'll generally have a sense. Like you said, I'd like it to be a little warmer than 68. And so you may need to warm up a little bit to go to sleep and have those warm toes. And there's lots of studies that say warming up to go to sleep. Then there's that second bucket of once you've fallen asleep, that your night is, although you go through all of the cycles of deep light and REM sleep throughout the whole night, that first half of the night is really heavily deep sleep. And this gets into the cold because your core body temperature, as we just discussed, is dropping during this time. It's going to drop about 2 degrees all the way inside your core. Those are your core organs. 2 degrees is a lot for that to drop. And so it wants it to be colder to release all of the healing, to do what your brain wants to do as far as filing memories and cognitive load, de-stressing, all of those magical things that happen during sleep, deep sleep especially, they want it to be cold because that's what your body is doing during that time. So whatever you start at that first bedtime temperature, you want to be cooler than that. And what you want to be as far as your cooling temperature, for me, I like to warm up. I'm actually north of that room temperature to fall asleep, but I always crank it as low as possible. When you're in deep sleep, you don't have a good sense of temperature. You don't rate that as far as your brain goes. So just crank that sucker down as far as chili pad goes. But even your room, if you have a programmable thermostat, anything you can do to be cooler during that first half of the night is going to help you out. Some people will even take an ice bath prior to going to bed to start that cooling process to trigger that sleep switch. Some people take a warm shower as that change of temperature trigger that sleep. But if you think about that second bucket being cooler, now I think you even said first time you tried the chili pad, you were cooler. You were too cold in the morning when you set it cold. So your second half of your night as your body comes out of that valley is predominantly REM sleep. That's all that dreaming and you're kind of in a lighter state. It's again, not to say that you won't get any deep sleep, depending on the person you might, but it's definitely heavier in the REM and light sleep. And that all wants it warmer. So if you picture, again, back to our ancestors, the sun is coming up over the horizon. It's warming up the earth. Our body is looking for that experience, temperature, light, all those things we can do as we come out of sleep will actually, it's amazing. You get a cortisone burst as that sleep switch switches back to awake. It'll actually release cortisone. In the evening, it releases melatonin. And the other end of that is that cortisone where you're like, wow, I feel good today. And that good feeling can really come from great deep sleep and timing everything really well is that magical moment like, wow, I rocked it last night. I did amazing.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there with synchronicity as far as your circadian rhythm and your temperature. When you get those two in sync, that's when the magic happens.
That is when the magic happens. And again, because you're unconscious, it's a pretty phenomenal thing to be able to get that benefit. So even if you're doing those sleep apnea treatments, you're managing some of the other factors, even just managing stress through meditation or whatever you do to kind of de-stress, that gratitude journaling category of stuff, it all just gets enhanced by that temperature metric of managing that properly for your body. Then it can do what it's supposed to do during that time.
So speaking a little bit more about temperature, and you touched on this a little bit too as well, cold therapy has gotten very popular these days with the Wim Hof methods and cold showers, which I've talked about before, and cryotherapy and ice plunges, which is something that I've set up in my backyard. I've got one of those chest freezers now that I'm going in and it's literally 32 degrees. So I'm becoming more comfortable with the cold. And I think we can see the benefits of the cold while you sleep as well. And in fact, I think I saw an article that said sleeping cooler will reduce white fat and increase brown fat activation. Did you see that as well?
Yes, yes. And we're getting similar metrics as far as even just metabolism and recovery. We have a lot of professional athletes. We have military personnel, a lot of like high performance people that are finding that managing that, I think some of it's just the power of sleep as well, but having it cooler at night allows all of those systems to do their magic. I'm a huge believer in cryotherapy and ice baths and all of that. It's pretty awesome what it does for you.
It is. And you know, every time I do it, there's always that little bit of hesitation right before, like, what am I doing? But then I just do it. And then afterwards I'm like, okay, it was worth it.
It is. There's anyone that thinks that it's just an easy thing and you have to talk yourself off that cliff. Yeah. Maybe someone that has, like Wim Hof himself, has perfected it, but I do. I have to talk myself off the cliff and climb in every time.
I'm the same. And it's funny. I was watching a Tony Robbins event, and even he said, he goes, you think I wake up looking forward to jumping into freezing ice water? He goes, no, you know, but it's that kind of overcoming that mental block and then understanding the benefits afterwards. So I know you touched on this a little bit, and you said everybody has a little bit of a different optimal sleep temperature. How do we know what ours is going to be? I mean, for the most part, people just go to sleep at night and then they wake up. But like, if you want to kind of dial this in a little bit more, how do you go down that path of finding out what's going to work better for you?
Yeah. So, you know, like I described, you know, sort of the first pass is always think about your different buckets of sleep. Think about what feels good to go to sleep in. Think about being cooler than that. But like for example, I use the Oura Ring, but uh-huh. I have tried, I think, every sleep tracker, anyone that news that comes out, I've got it. I actually put my bed up on risers because I've got sensors under me and next to me and on me. I think I've tried them all. And so this is the current winning favorite for sure. I do recommend looking at your HRV and resting heart rate because those also do come into that, you know, stress recovery. Am I doing what I'm supposed to do? Am I just hitting the stages of sleep, or am I actually really hitting those recovery? And you do want that resting heart rate to hit the lowest and match that sort of bottoming out of your circadian rhythm. Those do go right in hand, and that's some of the magic of realizing, like, oh, I've really rocked this because my resting heart rate is the lowest at that approximate time, and somewhere between 4 and 5 hours after you go to sleep, if you're going to sleep for your circadian rhythm, you're going to be in that valley there, because there are night owls and morning people, and it does shift. But if you're at that spot and you've hit your little hammock in the middle, if you're getting good recovery numbers on your HRV, and HRV is another one of those similar to temperature where you can't say this is the one number, and no. If you hit that number, you're amazing. If that was the case, I am highly competitive and my husband has amazing HRV numbers. I always look at it like WTF a little bit.
Yes.
It's like, how do you get numbers like that?
I'm the same with my wife. I mean, I do everything on the planet to try and get that number up, and it's just depressing. And hers, she doesn't do anything, and it's like through the roof. I'm like, what's up with that?
It is. It's definitely, you have to just own your own number as yeah. much as it's frustrating, especially for those competitive people. But if you own your own number and you start to compare before and afters and over time, you will see, like, I do see a significant change from when I first started tracking it probably about 2.5 years ago. And when I look at the other things I've added in of stress reduction, no alcohol in the evenings, that's definitely a big buzzkill one. I have that conversation with people a lot. Alcohol it may even help you fall asleep. So it kind of lulls you into the sense of, I'm good for you, I'm going to help you fall asleep. But then it's terrible for that recovery and deep sleep and HRV. So mm-hmm. as I've wheedled out and sort of perfected that sleep equation, it's definitely gotten better for me, but it's definitely my number, not Todd's number.
Yeah. And I think you're right there too, as far as finding optimal, whether it is an optimal temperature or optimal routine or sequence or bedroom setup, you know, a lot of it has to do with feedback. And you know, I use the Oura Ring, and I've got the BioStrap, and I've got all the different sleep trackers, and those really help guide us. And if you are going to go down this road of optimizing, you want to know what's working and what isn't. So I'm a fan of those as well. In fact, I got a super high score on my Oura Ring this morning. I think I got a 94 on my readiness.
Ooh, look at you.
I think I'm ready for this podcast. I think we're doing all right. The optimal sleep temperature, and this one's, you know, going back to the patients that I treat here, a lot of them are perimenopausal and menopausal women because of the fat distribution change, and the sleep disorder breathing tends to get worse for women in the late 40s, early 50s. Does our temperature, besides
menopausal women, does our temperature requirements change even going from kids through, you know, middle-aged and older? Because I'm trying to also hack my kids' sleep, and they're 7 and 9, and I've put the chili pad in their room, and I don't know if it's even doing anything, if I should be doing it. My son tends to turn nuclear and heat up when he goes to sleep at night. My daughter's always freezing, so I don't know. What are your thoughts on kids and then kind of middle age and as we get older?
So I think I have 4 boys and all of ours have chili pads on, for better or worse. Apparently I'm experimenting on my own children.
Hack my kids all the time.
For whatever that's worth. And they all tend to sleep hot. They all, boys versus girls, I'm not sure, but since I have all boys, they at different parts, like as they went through puberty, there was definitely swings in their temperature, not that different than perimenopause or menopausal. As they changed in their BMI and size and growth spurts and all those different hormone bursts, you could see variations in that happening in them as well. So definitely as we move through our life changes, and although men don't have menopause per se, but your body and your metabolism, as much as you hate to admit it, does change as well as we get older.
It's funny because I actually get most of my patients are guys from 40 to 50, and I call 40 the menopause. And what's happening when we hit 40 is, you know, testosterone levels start to drop. There's typically, you know, a partner, a spouse, kids, family, work, stress. So in some sense, it's kind of the female version, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's just not as obvious, I think, but definitely you guys have your own things as well. I do feel like the temperature, we're in the middle of a study right now with Wake Forest. We've done some other studies. There are some independent studies separate from what we've done with menopause and temperature. And I think it's a lot about the power of sleep a little bit, but as women move through those temperature changes, keeping it neutral to cooler will really help them have less hot flashes. So most of the time, I think both studies published that are published, and we're trending that same way, is there's about a 50% reduction overall in hot flashes, both day and night, if you manage temperature at night. And some of that, like I said, is, I think, attributed to just getting good sleep. So if you're not being woken up by temperature, if you're eliminating that from a reason for getting up and disrupting your sleep, that you actually have less symptoms during the day. That's why we're seeing that reduction happen, not just at night, but during the day. So it almost eliminates them at night. And in that process, it really affects even during the day having less. And that's just being healthier and getting sleep. Sleep's awesome.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me that. So interesting one here for you is regulating bed temperatures is somewhat not new, at least for the heating element part of it. I know when I was in grad school in Chicago, I was at Northwestern many years ago, the winters are cold there, and I had an electric blanket. And these things have been around forever. So what is the problem with electric, at least for the heating part of it, what's wrong with electric blankets, or should we be using them, or should we not be using them?
So the physicist in me says we should not, and it's the EMFs. Mm-hmm. EMF is a big word when you break it out. It's electromagnetic fields. Anytime you have an electron moving, which is basically electricity, you get this magnetic field. And obviously the size varies with the intensity of and strength of those fields can adjust. Our phone has, well, like I said, anytime there's electricity. The problem with the heating coils is when you're sleeping at night, your body has reserved that as a healing time. And EMFs attribute to basically being stress. They're stressful to your body. Your body can manage that stress potentially, but when you use EMFs or have EMFs in your sleeping space, you're basically putting extra stress on your body at night. Now, some people manage it like they do stress otherwise. Some people are very good at managing stress and their bodies manage it. Some people will manage EMFs really well and it doesn't really seem like a factor for them. But a lot of people find that EMFs, and I think more and more people are getting sensitive to them as EMFs grow in our lives. Obviously, 50 years ago, even, there wasn't the same amount of EMFs because there wasn't Wi-Fi, there wasn't all of these other sources happening invisibly to us. 5G is pretty scary in the sense that it's a whole new range of impact and intensity that we have for, and we don't have good information necessarily. There's a couple of sites that have tracked studies on it as far as good versus bad, and I think I like to look at it of similar to climate change, of there's scientists that are like absolutely all in and say that it's happening. And then there's always going to be some that say, no, that you guys are crazy. There's no way that temperatures are changing. So you definitely, I really encourage people to read the information, read the study, read who did the study, how many people they did it on, you know, and really figure it out for themselves. But if you're having a hard time sleeping and there's not a lot of mystery, or there is a lot of mystery of why you're not able to sleep, a lot of those people are tracking that back to a new digital meter being put in their apartment building, or a new big source, or a new cell phone tower, and they track back some of those disturbances. Those are not being studied or quantified entirely yet. They're starting to be, and I think that it's going to be a problem we're going to have to figure out in the future, kind of like climate change. We're going to have to own that at some point.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I've actually done a episode here about dirty electricity going through the house and the EMF consequences of that. And you know, I haven't used an electric blanket in so long. The good news is that the chili pad has a heating function in it as well, which is something that I enjoy doing. I'll turn it up before I get into bed and it's just nice and toasty. And then I can start working on cooling down as I fall asleep. But as far as, and I know a lot of biohackers listen to this podcast of mine as well too, and you brought up the topic that, you know, there are certain sources of EMFs. Fortunately, with the chili pad, it's literally just water being circulated. So that's not an issue, correct?
Yeah, it's just water. So although, you know, in full disclosure, there is electricity that runs that pump.
The little box.
Yes, the little box. And if you take out your meter within a foot and a half to 2 feet, you will find that that EMF field is completely gone. So that's part of where we encourage people to put it under their bed, on the far side of their nightstand, wherever that, you know, to create some of that space for it so that it doesn't exist as far as a factor, because we don't, that's one of the reasons people ask us why we don't have sensors in our bed. Partly is to manage that. I don't want to contribute to that. If you decide to have sensors on you or manage those sensors, most of them are really low, but this way it's not attached to that unit. You'll get to have that choice.
Okay. And you have a new product that I've also tried as well, because one of the concerns I had was programmability of the original unit. And so you guys answered that one already and developed the Uller, right?
Yes.
So can you tell me and us a little bit about how that one works and versus the original chili pad?
Yeah, so the chili pad is definitely our legacy model, and I really look at it like thermostats. So in the house that your parents had, there was a single thermostat. You adjusted that, is a big dial. And when you set it, it would stay there come hell or high water. It could be 90 degrees out or 5 degrees out. It stayed at whatever temperature you left that. Chili pad does that. So for some people, Todd is a good example. He's just always hot. So as far as he's concerned, it can always be a slab of ice that he sleeps on, and he sets it to that and just always sleeps on it. I am a big proponent of Uller, and it would be equivalent to having a Nest or one of those programmable thermostats out there where there's a program. I can have a different program for each day of the week. I can have different programs throughout the night for those 3 buckets of sleep, because being the geek that I am, I want those buckets to match what my body is doing, and I want to drill down and be very specific on that. So it allows me that flexibility to be as nerdy as I choose to be on my sleep.
Yeah, I tend to be nerdy on my sleep as well too. That's why we get along.
Exactly.
So one of the features that you could do with these programmable ones like that is have it set so it could be cooler throughout the night, but then wake you up with a little bit of gentle heat. Is that correct?
Yeah. So that's where it goes back to, you really want to think about those 3 buckets your night and your sleep. Obviously, we all go to sleep at different times. Some people, like shift workers or people recovering from jet lag, we have professional athletes that will use that consistently. So even if they're from the West Coast and they have the game on an East Coast, they'll use that to maintain their same sleep windows. So it can work like that depending on when you go to sleep. If you set your buckets from that point forward, you can get that matching with your circadian rhythm, and that's what you're looking for.
So
we also have a warm awake feature, which is added on top of that. You can use a warm awake alarm, and your body will get woken up from that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of like a warm awake versus an alarm. I mean, do you use an alarm clock? I don't.
No, I have kids and animals, which kind of act like an alarm clock on the side. So I don't know that. I usually am awake in bed, wait, and then I know that the pouncing will about to begin. So I don't know. I don't set an alarm clock.
Yeah, I think that's the better way to wake up. I used to use an alarm clock a lot. Obviously, some people have certain requirements that they have to wake up at a certain time. But once I've dialed in my sleep schedule and routine and hygiene, I'll generally go to sleep within 20 or 30 minutes the same night each night and wake up almost the exact same time every morning. So I know that it's dependable. I mean, I'll set an alarm just in case so I don't oversleep, but that never happens. And I wake up usually about 6:24 in the morning. It's crazy.
Yeah,
every day.
Sleep is very consistent. And I do use that. A lot of people are like, well, how do I know when I'm getting enough sleep? Because a lot of people are all about that 8 hours. And I feel like it's really less about the 8 hours and getting the right quality and the quantity of the right amount of sleep. So if you have, you know, are in bed for 8 to 9 hours and you need an alarm because you're just exhausted, there's something else broken in your sleep. It's not just about physically being in that space for 8 hours. That does not magically make you a great sleeper. And one of those signs, I think, is not needing an alarm clock if you've got sleep to work for you. Yeah. Obviously, there's times like you got to catch a plane or something. But in general, like if you wake up, you're good.
Yeah, that's a great point you brought up as well too, because a lot of people ask me, you know, what's the optimal sleep time, but it's different for everybody. And I've asked this from another guest as well too. And I tend to think this is true, is that if you're sleeping optimized or sleeping healthy, you generally need a little less sleep versus someone who's either chronically inflamed or dealing with some illness where their body is going to require more sleep.
Yeah, if you think about sleep as your time to heal, your body doesn't really take the time to heal during the day or file memories. So if you think about at night, that's what your body's going to focus on. It needs more time to do that potentially. Athletes that work really intensely and they just finished a marathon, very likely going to sleep longer because their body has to recover from what they just put it through. So that's definitely that way. But I also, there's a lot of people, Todd is a night owl. He does not need as much sleep at night, but he's the king of power naps. Mm-hmm. And he can take a 20-minute nap, and that feeds some of his needs. So, you know, the metrics are really hard because there isn't a specific recipe. Like, you just do A to B and everybody on the planet has an awesome sleep. There's no one, this is it, this is all thing.
Yeah, I don't think there is either. And everyone is always looking for that magic pill or silver bullet or whatever for sleep. But it's really a fine tuning process that we get to play with every single night and try and tweak it a little bit.
Yeah. And honestly, it's a progress. Like you said, it does change throughout your life. So, you know, there's also nothing wrong with, I've got this rocking, and then, you know, you hit perimenopause or you turn 40 or whatever, some event happens, or you have a newborn who, like, yeah, you don't know. There's going to be different times in your life that you're going to have to figure out a new sleep metric.
So you are a travel enthusiast as well. And when we travel, and I've had this discussion with some other guests as well, when we travel, we are putting our circadian rhythm out of whack, and there's this phenomenon called jet lag, which you mentioned as well. So what are some of your tips or recommendations as far as reducing or mitigating the jet lag so we can either enjoy our vacation or our business trip or whatever we have to do?
Yeah, you know, some of it depends on how big of a time switch there is and how long you're planning to be there. You know, you're on the West Coast. I do business trips on the West Coast, and a lot of times they're 1 or 2 nights, and that's not generally going to be enough to reset or not reset. So I do, when I have the flexibility, try to gear that around the fact that I'm going to get up at a different time. I'm going to be up and I want to go to bed, and I'm going to try to keep it the same because I just am more functional. I have a better meeting and I kind of have to respect my sleep not that much. If I've got a bigger time window and a little more flexibility to actually adapt, then I'm going to take that time to reset it. And when I do reset it, it is a respect to that circadian rhythm of, if I want to reset it, I'm going to reset it hard because I went to London and I've got a trade show, I've got to land. By 7 o'clock in the morning local time, I am outside, I'm exercising. It doesn't have to be like CrossFit. It needs to be outside, moving my body, getting my heart rate moving, telling my body, I am starting my day. It's official. This is the moment. This is it. You know, and it's easy once you get off a plane to want to sleep or catch up on sleep. But, you know, if you want to reset it, you need to kind of hit the ground running hard and know that you'll have to go to sleep probably earlier and compensate that way. But start that morning when that morning's supposed to start. That's the fastest way to set that.
Love it. For the biohackers that are listening, the people who are the sleep hacking crowd, I've been asking my guests this question. What is your nighttime routine, or how do you end a day and get yourself set up for a great night's sleep?
So I am a morning person, and I really need to be in bed by 9:30 to be asleep by 10 o'clock kind of thing. So I do, I feel like there's a big part of it is gratitude and that meditation, you know, metric of divesting whatever I did for the day, making sure I don't take that to-do list for the next day into my sleep. I'm a big problem solver person. So if I leave that to-do list sitting in my head, I'll just percolate on that all night instead of waiting for tomorrow. So if I write it down, I put it in its spot. Owning that sleep time is really important. I like to read before I go to bed. So that is no Netflix running until I fall asleep or as I fall asleep. That's definitely a big part of that darn TV, limiting that in the evening. And you know, some of it, because I do travel, it's like I do take magnesium. Part of it's my age. That's something I've added recently is keeping that magnesium level high. That seems to be, especially if I travel and I'm dehydrated and I'm not as good about my routine, keeping that solid really seems to help. But a big part of it is just the sacred part of our space for sleep and owning when you go to sleep. It's the only room in our house we call a bedroom. It's named after the piece of furniture, not by what we do in that space. Ah. So, you know, really go into your sleep space with the idea for sleep and how you're going to seed that night to be the best night you can be.
Yeah, best night ever. That's the name of the podcast, and that's what it's all about. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much the same. I tend to have a kind of a wind down hour. Light control is a big one for me as well, too. I don't know about you, but I have a bunch of red lights all over my house at night. It turns into like a nuclear submarine, and that helps. It's crazy because it's gotten so efficient for me that I'm falling asleep too early. I'm like 8:39. I'm out. And now at some points I have to actually stare at my phone a little just to, as almost like a fake caffeine just to prevent falling asleep because I'm getting to bed too soon, which is an issue because then I wake up at like 5 a.m. and I got too much to do in my mind. But that's a whole different thing. Okay, so this has been great. I mean, I hope people get a good appreciation and understanding of what this technology is and how powerful it can be. I'm always looking for different gadgets and supplements and technologies and routines and bed and sleep hacking things. And controlling the temperature has got to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest ROI when it comes to sleep, because you can think about people who say, oh, well, I go to sleep okay, but I end up waking up 2-3 times at night. This tends to keep me asleep. For people who say, well, I tend to sweat at night, this helps with that. I've also found using this with like a weighted blanket tends to give us almost an extra little bit of comfiness or coziness. Have you seen that at all for that one?
Oh, I love weighted blankets. I am an absolute addict to my weighted blanket. It's probably the one thing that I wish there was a way to add weight when I travel and I could take a weighted blanket with me. But yeah. I have not found a hack for traveling with your weighted blanket.
Because it's literally just weight. Yeah.
It's just weight. And airplanes will hate you for doing
that. They hate weight, yes.
Yeah. So I have not found a hack to take my weighted blanket with me. But I do feel like that is a big helper. The technology is, it's willpower free. It is not cheap to cool your body and to do it quietly at night. I will definitely admit that. But as far as return on investment, it runs on 140 watts of power. So when you look at how much energy you could waste cooling your house to get that same effect, it's pretty efficient to do it just under your body a third of the time in your house, you're in that one space. So managing that properly, efficiently is definitely worth the investment.
All right. So if people want to go and learn more about the Chili Pad or the Uller, where would you recommend them to go?
All right. So our website is Chili Technology, C-H-I-L-I, because it's chili hot or chili cold, technology.com. And if you have questions, I'll take questions at sleepgeek@chilitechnology.com too. So if you want to ask more questions, they could do that.
Sleepgeek@chilitechnology.com, and chilitechnology.com is the website. And I think we've also secured a discount for people who are interested in either of these technologies. And it's Best Night Ever 25, which will get you 25% off your Chili Pad, or Best Night Ever 15, which will get you 15% off your Uller. I've had the benefit of using both of these technologies. I got to say, I love the Uller now because it has this programmability. And if you really want to just take this to the next level, geek out, hack your sleep, this is the kind of thing that you want in your bedroom. We've talked about this before off the mic as well. Our bedrooms, probably you and I, have like almost sleep laboratories at this point, where we've got all kinds of different trackers and gadgets and metrics and technologies. And for me, the net result is phenomenal sleep. I mean, I'll post it on my Instagram. I have an Instagram called Sleep Biohacker, and I'll put up the results of all these different things I do. And people are like, oh my God, you're getting ridiculous, amazing sleep. And these are the secrets. And I just want to get the word out there. Like, these are the things that will help take your sleep to the next level if that's what you're interested in. And it's not hard. Like you said, literally you set the thing up and you fill it with a little bit of water and off you go. It's not like rocket science. You don't have to, it's not like you have to commit to it or do something different. It's not a workout. You literally just turn it on and go to sleep, right?
Yeah. And I think the hackability part, I'd share my data as well. Deep sleep numbers is something that declines with age and is hard to achieve. And I can, with temperature, get 2 hours of deep sleep, 2 hours of REM sleep, and 6 hours of sleep.
That's like Dave Asprey numbers. Yeah. And you've got, you know, these big time hackers like Ben Greenfield and Dave Asprey, Rick Rubin, Mark Sisson. I mean, the list goes on and on. And you got to say, well, if all these people are super high performers and they're doing this, well, they must know something that I don't, and maybe you should pay attention.
I have that conversation all the time. So we have everyone from former presidents to royalty kind of level of people sleeping on this, but they all have personal doctors. They all have strength and conditioning coaches. They have personal coaches that are following around looking at their metrics. And that is our biggest source of viral adoption, is the people that are measuring high performers every single day. This is what they most recommend for sleep.
Well, you have a fan here, so that's for sure. So again, if people want to learn more, they can go to chilitechnology.com. If you want a discount code, bestnightever25 will get you 25% off of your Chili Pad, and bestnightever15 will get you 15% off your Uller. Like Tara said, these aren't the cheapest technologies, but I think as far as ROI goes, it's a no-brainer between the energy costs of cooling your entire house versus just having a nice cool bed. And the amount of time that you're going to use it, which is a third of your life, I think it's money well spent.
I agree.
All right, Tara. So I want to thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. I learned a lot. I hope everyone out there enjoyed this. Definitely start paying attention to how you're sleeping as far as your temperature goes, and think about it, because it could really make a big difference. And I think you guys offer, is there a money back guarantee?
Yeah, 90 days satisfaction. You know, we have really great followers. Our tribe of Chili users are, that's one thing I will say, is it's addictive to sleep on good temperature. Once you start getting great numbers, like I talked about, it's pretty hard to go back. So that is the one disclaimer. Like, once you go in on temperature for sleep, it is hard to go back.
All right, perfect. Yeah. So again, folks, thanks again. Tara, thank you so much. And stay tuned. We'll see you all next time on another episode of The Best Night Ever.
Hey folks, I hope you enjoyed that show. It's always fun talking to another sleep scientist about all the ways to geek out on sleep and take your sleep to the next level. And thank you for making it all the way to the end. If you want to learn more about what I do and you're in the LA area, you're more than welcome to visit me at Snore Experts, which is my practice where I treat patients for snoring and sleep apnea. Or if you want to dive deeper into the world of sleep and biohacking, you can follow me on my Instagram. It's Sleep Biohacker on Instagram. Again, that's Sleep Biohacker. And That's where I showcase and share all my crazy technologies and gadgets and supplements and routines and all the ways that I use to get fantastic sleep every single night. So thanks again for tuning into the show. I've got some great guests coming up in the future, and I can't wait to announce those. And in the meantime, I hope you have great sleep and see you next time.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only. Statements and views expressed in this show are not medical advice. The show, including Dr. Jay Corsandi, the co-host, guest, and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of any information contained herein. Opinions of the guests are their own. We do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests, nor do we make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. If you think you have a medical problem, please consult a licensed physician.